What is the name of the show? What's the name of the show, Zach?
Back Row Super Show, I believe.
Is that right?
Yes.
Did we copyright that yet?
Yes.
Did we?
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Well, we purchased the domain.
Yeah, but it's not a registered trademark.
Sure it is.
Don't steal it, please.
You may want to edit this out. Hey, so this is actually episode 13.
Mm-hmm. Every time you hear someone say, we might want to edit this out, they shouldn't.
Right, yeah. We're going to talk about Monty Python, or It's... Didn't see those skits, huh?
No.
Okay. All right. That's something they did, I think, only for the first, like, five or six episodes, mm-hmm. is they would generally have, like, the open of a guy really far off in the mm-hmm. distance. Usually it's Michael Palin, and he's getting progressively closer and closer and closer to the camera, closer and closer and closer, and finally he pops up. He points at the screen, and he goes, "It's..." And then it cuts to the Monty Python music.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool. So basically, yeah. My slant for this subject and material is I did not consume all of the Monty Python media. It's mm-hmm. not something I had access to growing up, and it's not something that anybody I knew had any sort of interest in. So it was only once I got a little bit older as a teenager, being like, oh, Monty Python. I hear a lot of my hipster friends are talking about that.
Yeah.
Let me check out... Probably at least something.
Hipster, geeky, smarter friends, probably.
Well, they thought they were smarter.
Well, they thought they, exactly. That's something we'll talk about.
So what I tried to do for this podcast, other than possibly consuming five seasons of material over a short amount of time in several films, was just kind of do a sampler from several seasons, just so I wasn't, because otherwise I would have watched like maybe the first season and a half. And the beginning of the second season.
I could have lent it to you. I have the entire, like, oeuvre.
Because, by the way, a lot of what's on YouTube, I don't know if they have an official outlet on YouTube.
Probably through A&E. I think A&E does their U.S. rights.
So I'd have to check that out. Because a lot of what I found in the sampling manner that I looked for was just varying levels of quality. Like, DivX, watermarks the on watermarks. The sides, 240p audio sound crackly. It was great. So,
let me guess, the skits you pulled up were probably, what is it? Probably Hermits. Probably
I saw
Spanish,
Hermits.
Spanish Inquisition.
I didn't. I think I've seen the Spanish Inquisition before,
elsewhere.
But not on this
yeah.
one. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. YouTube probably does not have the like really, really deeper cut.
No, I would imagine not.
But yeah, no, I'll let you borrow the thing sometime.
Yeah, this should, all the audience is thinking, why didn't these assholes do that beforehand? Hey, this is not a highly produced show. It is not.
It's two dudes sitting around in their underwear talking into mics.
Yeah, and it's optional how many flaps are shut on the underwear. That's how you feel, man. So we will... kind of keep this as a conversation, and I might kind of pick Zach's brain on this and just kind of give my initial impressions as a consumer of
sure.
Monty Python.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's first do me time. Do you want to go?
Yeah, let's see. I recently started watching the second season of Stranger Things, season 2. I think we got through the first two or three episodes. We tend to watch them one or two at a time, so we might have even gotten to episode 4. And I'm enjoying it a lot. It was, and I was talking with you earlier about it, it was really kind of perplexing for me how they were going to take their retro love letter kind of format of the first season. And they hit a lot of notes for things. We got a bicycle scene. We got a bicycle chase. We got like really bad hair. We got plaid couches. You know, we got wood paneling in homes. So we have a lot of like things that borrow from that period in that stylistic warehouse of things and story elements. You know, we're focusing on kids, which is something that borrowed from. You know, Spielberg does that a lot for his films. And we have really great electronic Carpenter-esque music playing in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, which sounds great on a sound system with enough bass representation, by the way.
Yes, it does.
And so I was wondering what they were going to do, because if you're going to go to a second season, how are you going to not make this just like a retrospective love letter and develop this into something new and unique and keep it fresh while still paying homage to those particular stylistic directions that you were borrowing from. So
yeah, like one of the, I think I started to say it earlier and you were like, no, we'll talk about it during the podcast, is that because the first season leaned so heavily on references, like that gets played out really quickly. And I think the first season is only like 8 episodes. So yeah. It's not like you have 22 episodes to just be hit over the head with these references. You can just kind of sit and stew in them and appreciate them for what they are and move on. In the second season, I'm curious to see where it goes, I guess, in terms of the references, because my impression would think it would be a better direction for them to move into if they were to turn it into an anthology series, kind of like American Horror Story. And you can kind of have a season pulling on traditions from horror movies in the 70s, or weird movies from the 70s, or movies from the 60s or the 90s or what have you. There's only so much material you can do with that.
Yeah, I mean, American Horror Story is kind of bumping into that with their own kind of thematic things, but they've still managed to do a pretty good job from what I understand.
Yeah, I would say that American Horror Story, Murder House is okay. We'll see. Asylum is great. Coven is 8 out of 10. Freak Show is bullshit. Don't waste your time. Hotel is 10 out of 10. If you only have time to watch one American Horror Story or thing, Hotel is the best. I haven't seen Roanoke or Cult, but I'm interested in them. So yeah, anthology series, it would run into that, like the story kind of like circling back on itself of like, okay, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. But, you know.
I think you could do that direction. You could have it to where they just try to mine more obscure references to things, which so far within my watching of the first, I think, 3 or 4 episodes, that's not what they've done. Mm. And I think what they're trying to do is take that material and grow it up. So it's like if we could revisit this and revisit these particular themes.
Like a year later, because it's a year later.
It's a year later. But if we could take these particular themes and things that we dealt with in 80 storylines and kind of revisit and see, okay, if this period didn't end, if it continued on, which is kind of it's a funny thing to say, but it's something you can write it that way, even if you can't live it that way.
Sure.
Like if we could relive and grow up this particular kind of storytelling, that borrows a lot from references and things in the 80s, which for me, references just kind of provide, they're like nice furniture. They kind of just provide like an interesting atmosphere and environment, whether it's like Legos or something like the dad of the main characters, who's just like the biggest tool. And that's even an honest sort of retrospective, I imagine, on the part of the writers. I know I've talked to people about the show who were around that time, or you know, have parents that grew up in bar from that period, and they're like, yeah, that was totally my parent. He's like, don't run in the house, kids. And he had no idea what they were arguing about. Yeah. No clue.
Nope.
Or he'd be like, you don't say stuff like that at the dinner table. And he had no idea what kind of angst or life his
friends' parents growing up like that. Yeah.
And so that's kind of a thing. And I feel like what maybe they're trying to do is trying to take those themes and story elements and grow them up. Like, yeah, let's see where we can take this further. So,
sure.
It's been fun. So far, I haven't finished it, but I'm enjoying my journey so far.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Other than that, what was that, about 10 minutes? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's all I want to delve in now. I am moving into Tennessee.
Yeah. So sad. So sad.
So we will try our damnedest to continue on with this format. I'm not sure if Back Row Super Show will become an anthology. But I will show Zach how to do this production and editing thing, yep, and we will see how this works long distance, you know.
Yeah.
There is Skype, you know.
There's Skype.
There's boxes of tissues and lotion, you know. There's remote communication. There's a lot of technology nowadays.
Yes.
There's those, what is it? I saw those iPad attachments. Yeah. So
I know what you're talking about.
Let's move on to another subject. So, yeah, it's going to be different. I'm really excited about the move as far as other aspects, yeah, and details of my life as far as what that provides. Going to be doing that pretty soon. So if I could transplant people that I like, I would. I would just move them and keep them in a little cage.
Yeah.
And make sure they're fed and watered. That's all I have to do. Maybe you gotta take them out, want to play with them, done with them, you know, put them back in the cage, let them back out again. But you know, it's called slavery, apparently. So I guess I can't do that. So yeah, that's about it. We'll see how that goes as far as the superness of this back row.
Yeah, I don't foresee any problems. We may have varying audio levels since we will be recording in two different places and then cobbling that together. So bear with us while we transition this. That'll probably be the next one, I would assume.
Maybe
a couple from now. We'll see if we can get some in the hopper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bear with us as Zach transitions. It's going to be tough. He wants to keep the beard. I told him no. But he said it's just part of him now.
And on that note, let's I'll go into my me time.
Mm-hmm.
So watched Terminator Genesis, which I think we saw in theaters, right?
Yeah. So you rewatched it?
I saw it in the library and I picked it up and I was like, I remember this movie being okay and decent and still ignorable at points so that I can sit on my computer and do things.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better than I remember it being.
Yes.
But it's not. It's much better than anything other than T2.
Yeah. I mean, Terminator 3 was. It's still hard for
Rise
me to
of the
try
Machines
to watch it.
Is horrible.
Oh, it's so bad.
Terminator Salvation is just dumb. Like, it's just a big, dumb movie.
Yeah.
It's trying so hard to make you think that it's deep and gritty.
Mm hmm.
But really what that is like a 14-year-old flicking a Zippo. Like,
yeah. I don't know why you would really want to take that direction with the material, because that's even T2, which is the height.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic, fun movie that succeeds successfully in emotional points.
Yeah.
Because it knows when to focus on that and it knows how to build that up in a smart way.
Sure.
Like, you can make a smart blockbuster.
Oh, yeah.
And T2 is definitely in smart blockbuster territory. Fantastic. And I thought Genesis, I was really saddened by the lack of play that Genesis had in theaters and the level of success.
Yeah, people just did not like that movie.
You know, and it's one thing I heard complained a lot about was the erasure of previous canon. And I was like, how precious is that canon,
like,
to you?
It's, yeah, like, there's a sequel to it every fucking 10 years. Like, it's not. It's not something that oh, we have 20 years worth of buildup. No, you had like 3 movies.
Yeah, it's not like you're erasing the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
No.
And retconning it for a new film. It's not like that. You know, it's a fantastic, perfect popcorn movie with a fantastic, perfect popcorn plot.
Yeah.
That does well as a film. I'm talking about T2, and T1 kind of sets the stage for that. And people are like, oh, I was really upset that they like erased all that stuff. It was like, if you just take a moment and stop slapping your phalanges on the keyboard for a moment, you can realize that it's doing that so it can do something different.
Exactly.
Like, so they can have some freedom to breathe and do something different with the storyline. All for it.
Yeah, I would be happy with a Terminator Genesis trilogy.
Yeah, that was fun. It had fun moments. It had plenty of fan service, like in the beginning where he fights himself and the younger Tita, and he just like shoots him out.
Uh-huh.
And Sarah Connor's got that big fucking gun.
Yeah.
And she's just like blowing holes in him. Uh-huh. Like, that is awesome.
Yeah. So. No, and, you know, putting on my evil producer hat, I could totally see playing a video game based off of this. Too like yeah. this is a rich world to play in, and because they've erased all that other bullshit that has happened before, they can do anything they want. That like they can just make up things and go, nope, this is part of the world now, and that's fun, and that's why we watch movies and are fans of things.
I mean, did you want them to build upon T3, or did you want them to build on Salvation? Like, what would you have them do? They took some of the best aspects of T2. Not the same caliber of film, but it was fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the interaction of, you know, the Terminator, Arnold's character, and, you know, the young new Sarah Connor.
Yep.
The one, God, I forget his name, the one who's supposed to be John Connor's dad.
Oh, Reese.
Reese?
Yeah.
I generally don't really like the actor that plays Reese.
Jai Courtney did a good job.
But he did a good job in that movie. It was entertaining. It was everything I wanted out of that kind of film.
Yeah, I mean, Terminator is not some big, deep, like, film, capital F. Like, it's supposed to be a fun, stupid sci-fi movie.
Yeah, and there's, like, little scenes, like, when they're punching in Jai Courtney's character, Reese, and the Terminator are trying to see who can put in the bullets faster in the clip.
Yeah.
And that's just like a fun, random thing that kind of naturally happens.
Sure.
And, of course, the new Skynet shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Does, like, really cool things. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why people hate it on it so much. It's good.
It's so sad.
Sorry that you guys have miserable lives if you don't like it.
And he brought back in the teddy bear. So the teddy bear?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much fan service in that movie that's done well. Why are you complaining, guys? You should have seen the movie.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So I also saw Hitman Agent 47. Right?
Did you?
Yes. So,
did anyone ask you to do this?
It was on the library shelf.
Oh, okay.
And I said, okay, I guess I'll watch this. This looks fun. So it seems like they're trying to make a James Bond movie back when Roger Moore was James Bond. Like, it's a big, dumb movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's some cool hand-to-hand fight scenes. Dialogue is really sloppily written. And otherwise, it's not very enjoyable. However, the reason I wanted to bring it up is that this is the first in a shared universe of Eidos films.
Shut up.
Just so you
didn't we learn from this already?
Just so you know, Hitman is the first. Tomb Raider, which is coming out with Alicia Vikander's weird neck in the poster art.
Did they do something in the poster art?
Yeah, it's like if she's looking over her shoulder, right?
It's a natural angle.
But if you were to stretch out the anatomy of the way that she's stretching, her neck would be like a foot long.
So they tried to make her like super sexy.
So there's Hitman, Tomb Raider's coming out, and it's followed up by Just Cause. And Eidos has...
Why would you make a Just Cause movie? That's just a Michael Bay explosion movie.
I really hope they get him to make it.
Oh my God, no.
Two other film franchises that they're putting in this film universe, and I don't know how the fuck they're going to make them all gel together, because it's a shared universe. It's not like we're just going to put these movies out. It's a shared universe. They're going to make a movie of Thief and Deus Ex.
No.
We talked about this last time. Video game movies don't make great adaptations, however fun they may be. I don't know why they're making a Just Cause movie, although I could see with the right director that would be fun, like a Michael Bay. How is Hitman, Tomb Raider, and Just Cause going to overlap with Thief?
And how are they really different enough to provide as foils to each other for characters?
I don't know. Like, they never cross over in the games. Oh, please, God, mean that that there's not going to be a game put out where you...
No. Some of the elements where you could combine, like a Just Cause and a Tomb Raider game, that would be amazing.
That's Uncharted, is what you're talking about.
Well, more of the Just Cause size. Okay. Less of the script date events.
Yeah.
And that would be amazing. So mashups like that work because you're talking about game mechanics. And you're talking about things that are complicated to get done, put well, and do right. them together. But a lot of what makes those games different is game mechanics. And there is like some world thing, world building, lore stuff. But it's...
Yeah. Well, like the first three I get, like Hitman, Tomb Raider, and Just Cause happen... You know, like present day, near future, whatever. Deus Ex and Thief are just so randomly, like Thief is supposed to be a medieval fantasy world, and then Deus Ex is like far future cyberpunk bullshit. Yeah. Like, what?
Those worlds take over each other.
Yeah, like you can't.
You put Lara Croft in a Deus Ex world, she's useless.
Yeah, she is absolutely useless.
Unless she gets some modifications, and then she's not useless.
If you put, let's see, what is the guy's name? The guy from Just Cause. Yeah, like, I don't know, just like, everything else I think could get along with Thief. Like, you know, Hitman, he could be quiet. Tomb Raider, she could open a portal or whatever. We've seen her deal with magical random bullshit.
Magical elements, yeah.
Same with Just Cause. What the hell is Deus Ex guy going to do in Thief World? Like,
yeah, seriously.
Like, that just seems ridiculous to match those things up.
I think that they're going to have to modify Deus Ex guy. He either time travels or he's basically the Bionic Man.
Yeah.
And that makes it much less interesting.
All of Deus Ex powers... would have to be basically Bionic Commando rather than upgrading neural networks and working on hacking, because what the fuck's he going to hack in the 12th century?
Yeah. I don't know. I think which is really odd, and it feels odd for me to say, it feels like an even harder sell for a shared universe than the Universal Monsters.
Which, yeah, I mean, Universal Monsters kind of go together, I think.
That could happen.
I mean, I have a Universal Monster on my leg, so I'm a fan, but...
like, that could totally happen. Whether that's really interesting or not is a separate thing.
Yeah.
But you could see them sharing the same world, at least.
Totally.
Oh.
Yeah, no, just that pregnant pause of just...
Sure, like, what are you going to do? League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? Is that what you're doing? Because that's not going to work either.
Nope. Hasn't before. We saw that. moving on. The music recommendation for this week is Grimes Art Angels.
Art Angels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or Grimes is the name of the performer. Art Angels is the name of the band or the album. Came out in 2015. She produced the entirety of this album in her LA home studio, just using Ableton and GarageBand.
That is so great.
That's so good. So I was doing some background reading on it because I'm not as familiar with Grimes. I just have this one album. So back when I was doing freelance, like one of her albums or maybe an EP was up for grabs or was sent. And I was just like, not feeling this one. This one's so glitchy and weird sounding, but now like Art Angels is, actually a really, really good album. But I was doing some background research and the songs on this album, I think it's 12 or 13 tracks. She culled them from hundreds of tracks that she created over 2 years.
Wow.
Between 2013 to 2015.
Interesting.
She describes it as ADD music and the alien love child of Aphex Twin and ABBA, which that's fair. The track to listen to on there would be Scream. So that is the Taiwanese rapper Aristophanes shouting things. And well, that's Grimes screaming and then Aristophanes rapping in the background. That's why it sounds like a foreign language, is because it is. It's Taiwanese.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you said she called that from thousands of tracks?
Hundreds.
Hundreds of tracks over yeah. 2 years?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, like I don't know exactly what's involved in her creating a track. Like, is it her just going, these sounds, and mix them together? And like, because, I mean, I could easily see that taking 30 minutes to do. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, yeah, I would hope you have hundreds after 2 years.
So I love, just as an aside, the idea of referencing, like, well-known, big-name acts as far as to try to describe your mashup, your particular stylistic makeup.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. Okay, my music is like a mash of Bill Nador. He made this album in his basement back in 1986 on a 4-track. I overheard some of it, and so I'm borrowing from that stylistic bent, and the guy who's always humming in line at the checkout at your local Kroger, I'm borrowing from the way he hums and sculpts melodies while he's checking out things that are produce-based.
Yeah.
Because he has more time looking up the numbers. Rather than, like, picking these big-name things that you're trying to borrow from. I'd love to see that. That's great. Anyways, that's just my brain. That's all that is.
That's it for me, other than the Monty Python stuff. So where did you want to dig in on Monty Python?
We could,
there's a lot for them to...
Isn't it kind of work backwards from... Let's work backwards. Let's start from the movie I've seen.
Okay, so Meaning of Life, mm-hmm. right? So Meaning of Life, I think I've said on another episode, or maybe it was just when we were talking, is Meaning of Life, it's very apparent that they are on the verge of breaking up. All of the... Like, the vignettes have a flow.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have a better flow than others because, you know, John Cleese and Graham Chapman were not, like, on speaking terms at that point. And I don't think there's actually a scene in the movie where they interact.
No.
But so a lot of the skits in that and the vignettes in that are disjointed and uneven. Overall, it's funny because some Monty Python is better than no Monty Python, but it's not their stronger work, I don't think.
So what has they ever really come out with exactly what started the division as far as the material and them personally?
Ego.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Ego.
The old standby.
Yeah, so these guys all met each other when they were in their 20s. Terry Jones and Michael Palin met at Oxford, and then who's left? Chapman, Cleese, and Idle, I think, met at Cambridge. Maybe I have the schools mixed up. But and so they started performing together, and then they hooked up with Terry Gilliam, who he does the art. He does the big foot coming down and all okay. of that. He plays a lot of the older ugly lady roles. He's King Arthur's he's Patsy in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the guy with the coconuts that follows him around.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly they didn't have it's either that they didn't have the budget for horses for that movie, or two of them were like deathly afraid of horses or couldn't ride or something.
And really a combination of that. I think I heard about the no budget for horses bit.
Okay. So yeah. And they met him while performing in New York, because Gilliam is the only, American. So yeah, you know, like it's the thing where very talented, very smart people meet when they're in their early 20s, probably late teens.
Mm-hmm.
And as their personalities actually solidify and develop, some of them have bigger egos than others.
I think it's always interesting because, you know, you can go to, 80s rock bands.
Yeah.
You can go to the Beatles.
Yeah.
Where you get that kind of development over time. And a lot of the strength of the work is because you have this mashup of personalities and different views on, okay, what's funny here. Maybe someone was like, I don't really think that's funny, but they got direction on the last skit, so it's like, okay, well, I'll just perform it anyways.
Yeah.
And so you get kind of a variation and a mishmash of those tastes.
Yeah.
And then you get, over time, someone's like, oh, well, my ideas are obviously better. You know, I'm going to speak out for myself. I have a voice.
Yeah.
And so then that individual voice starts to take over for what was actually the strength of it as a group, which is a mishmash and compromise of several different voices.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's fairly accurate.
Mm-hmm.
I think after Meaning of Life wrapped up, I don't think that John Cleese actually spoke to Graham Chapman until he delivered a eulogy at his funeral.
Yeah.
Not to him. Oh, that's a creepy way to
like
take
a
it.
Skit.
That sounds like a skit.
That's a skit. He's jumping in the coffin. This is your eulogy. You couldn't hear me now. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I really like a lot of their stuff. I got the complete Flying Circus, like from A&E or whatever.
Wow.
When I was, I think I was in like 7th or 8th grade for like a Christmas. That was like a Christmas present. And I was like,
was that VHS or DVD?
DVD.
Okay. All right. Respectable.
DVD. No, so yeah, I would have been high school at that point for a DVD present.
Mm-hmm.
I think I watched all of it without stopping, and there's like 24 or 25 hours worth of Monty Python on that.
That's great.
There's only like 40 episodes, but time lengths vary.
So you watched all of that at a very formative time
yes.
in your life, like
yes.
all together. So why aren't you funnier then? Oh, Sick Bird!
Sick Bird!
Oh, that's from the top rope, elbow to the face.
No, it's yeah, I don't know why I'm not funnier.
We don't have to roll with that. I just saw the setup
and
I could not go for it. Yeah. So great. So good.
Yeah, no, it's always been something that I found hilarious. Like, mm-hmm. I think I first saw Monty Python and the Holy Grail probably in 4th or 5th grade and thought mm-hmm. it was hilarious. Like, it was like on television somewhere. My dad was like, check this out. Watch this.
It's like, this is awesome.
This is awesome. Cause you know, like my dad would have been watching it when it was on, well, I guess at public access here in America. And then the movies came out probably when he was in high school or whatever. But yeah, no, like for whatever reason, there's just something about their humor, the surrealism, that it comes out of left field because it's so surrealist. Like it's, mm-hmm. And it came out at a time when comedy, like they were able to impact comedy in a way that, later shows would lift directly from,
mm-hmm.
Because I want to say the first episode was broadcast in 68 or 69.
I definitely, you know, to borrow a trope, I definitely they were would be the Shakespeares of comedy,
mm-hmm.
as far as like their level of influence and.
Yeah, you know. I mean, because the you know I'm sure you've seen the dead parrot sketch.
You know, I think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fun. Like, who the fuck would do that at that time? Like, because in America, you know, SNL wouldn't come out until 76
mm-hmm.
or so, 75, 76, something like that. I will grant it's a very strange sense of humor as well.
Mm-hmm. We have to. What's funny about watching it again recently is that you have to have your culture develop to a sense where you can feel comfortable making fun of it.
Yeah.
And especially if with you have English British culture, which of course has developed over time and, mm-hmm. you know, historical things, it moves along. I'm not saying it's just one stodgy old thing.
Right.
When you have a lot of conventions and you have a lot of social conventions, societal conventions that are traditional, and they've been established for a while, and you have certain characteristics of the culture as a whole, you can come back and make fun of those because they are hallmarks that everyone shares and understands,
right.
And you can poke fun of them in unique ways. And it translates still for an American audience because we understand conventions. We understand conversations that are taking place that are absurd within a courtroom.
Yeah.
You know, we understand why that's happening. One knock if you're dead.
Yeah.
You know, two for yes, you know, one for no. And so we understand that kind of oddball humor. But I think it's definitely is out of left field and does take a little bit of time to sort of sit and process. And there is long form setups.
Like
one thing I noticed that is the kind of thing I really enjoy. When you have one skit I was watching having to do with the larch, they have number one. They show like a little slide, and then they show larch, and it's a tree. It's a larch tree.
Yeah.
And they go larch, and then they come back, and then I think they come back again, and they go number three, and then I think they show something else, but then there's also like larch. Lodge. And so then it cuts later on to an interview with these supposed like school age kids. They're just the performers, and they're like, could you identify a larch tree if you saw it? And the kids are like, well, I don't think I could. And so there's not much logical connection between one
not,
and the other.
But it's funny.
Yes, but there is a referential kind of comedic impact that you get there. It's like, okay, there's the joke, there's the setup, but it's funny because that is a joke setup format, but that's not how you set up jokes. Like, that is not an effective, like, diagrammed way out. So this is how you set up a joke. But you understand that the way that they're kind of tongue-in-cheek illustrating, like, hey, this is how you set up a joke.
Yeah.
And so that I found was just hilarious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you bring up something interesting in that, you know, there's tons of improv classes out now, and there's tons of, what are they called? Comic coaches, I think, where they will show you how to diagram and write jokes and pace them out, which to me just sounds like a recipe for sounding like everyone the fuck else.
Yeah.
If you use the same patterns, it's like, how would you go about diagramming a Monty Python sketch? Or like, if you had access to the original scripts, like how would you go about analyzing those and breaking them down and going, okay, see, this is the punchline here. Mm-hmm. This is what's funny. It's like, well, yeah, but then they move past that and they keep going for another 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes the joke, like they have the setup for the joke, but the actual.
Yeah. The structure's just.
Yeah. It's odd. It's disjointed. And the actual really funny bit will take place after the joke is done, like in the little segue, like at the end, it's like, oh, okay, that's funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, and there are some episodes where, yeah, they'll in the opening, not in the opening credits, but I guess the post opening credits, they'll just sprinkle something, a phrase, maybe a character, and they won't come back to it until the credits are rolling at the end. that's a 30 minute long thing. Like it's really great that they started out on television, because you can do those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you could do those on, say, because I mean, you know, they did like comedy reviews and stuff. That's how they met Terry Gilliam. But you can't really do that in like with stage work, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I think you can do that much easier with television, because people are
used to sitting in a long format.
Right.
And like waiting for something else to pay off that was developed prior.
Right.
So it was, initially I started watching and I was like, okay, this is just kind of silly. And while there is that silly sort of, fantastical nature, there are, particular elements where they are, maybe are trying to say something. If it's not something specifically political, it is, you know, based about human nature or expectation or some aspect of just being human.
Yeah.
That is touched upon. And sometimes stuff is just silly. Like, what was it? The cat confusers, which is a,
that one escapes me.
Yeah. It's a great little skit where these people are complaining, or they're saddened because their cat just goes out onto their front lawn and just like stares and doesn't come back inside and just like stares into nothingness. So they have like a cat psychologist come out, and he comes in.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And he diagnoses the cat with, it's a particular kind of malaise.
Yeah.
Where he's just kind of disinterested. He has disinterested syndrome.
Yeah.
Something like that. And he's like, well, I mean, he's like, okay, what are we gonna do? And he's like, well, he says, I'm not really qualified for this, but what he needs is to be confused. So they bring in the cat confusers that come in.
Yeah.
And it's where you have a stupid punchline, a stupid element, and it continues on and just, it develops it logically in a longer kind of format for a punchline. And they come up and hold the stage play production. That has to do with like cut scenes and like film edits where people will, like things will be shot across the screen and then people will just like disappear, or like people will appear out of other sides or they'll teleport across the screen. And the cat's just sitting there, just like looking at it demurely with nothing on its face. And so it ends up that, you know, you do something with a cat, obviously, which is kind of what they're borrowing from. You do something stupid with a cat and they're like very confused. Like they see something disappear into something else. And they're like, what is that? What's going on there?
Yeah.
And so then they do that whole production and performance. And then the cat eventually goes inside because he's been thoroughly confused. So he's at peace now. And that's just so...
Which, that's the type of joke, though, that, like, that you hit the punchline, and initially it's not very funny, because the punchline is the initial punchline...
He's disinterested.
Is the psychologist going, well, he's disinterested,
and
right?
You're thinking, like, well, that's just cats.
Okay, that's just cats, whatever. And then they keep hammering past that with, here's the cat confusers, right? Because... The premise is I guess set up upon there being just this large scale industry where cats need to be confused. Mm-hmm. Like that's one of the things that they do very well is just hammering past a punchline. Like they'll hit a punchline.
Develop a joke.
Yeah.
And you can do that with absurdity.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing like life observational humor, that you can make really funny observations.
Yeah.
But you can't draw punchlines with non-logical connectives because you're talking about reality. Whereas if you have something like Monty Python, that takes a production. Like you need, you know, you'd be able to film that and set things up. But you can take humor beyond even like logical situations.
Yeah.
And but beyond even like observations. I'd say most humorous comedians that are talking about life situations, whether it's family, politics, society, they're making punchlines and they'll draw connectives, but they have a particular storehouse that they can work with.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess that's part of the draw for me, especially with something like Kids in the Hall, which you had an episode on prior, is that you can go past that. Same with it, Monty Python would. And they're different shows, so you don't have to like both of them.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see people preferring one over the other. Mm-hmm. I appreciate both, but they stylistically they are very different.
Mm-hmm.
Kids in the Hall, I think we were saying, is much much darker than Monty Python. They would be like the vaudeville act to that cabaret review.
They're darker, and they I'd say there's a level of.
You're trying to word nicely that you like Kids in the Hall more.
No,
right?
No. There's definitely a level of, there's modernity to Kids in the Hall, and there is a darker element to a lot of their humor.
Yeah,
and an absurdist bent with less of the silliness that you get with like Monty Python can talk about. Darker things too, without being somber. Like they can make a punchline about the absurdity of,
I'm not dead yet.
Yeah, of eyewitness testimony in like a courtroom. They can make observations about domestic life and that. Oh, but the biggest issue that they have here is their cat.
Yeah,
you know, things that are going on there, and I'd say that probably has. Has a lot to do with the time period and where you're drawing from culturally. So there isn't a clear division in maybe what they were going for, but just the performers and their environment and whatnot. Because one obviously comes after the other. Right. I don't think you'd ever get anyone involved in Kids in the Hall being like, oh, well, we didn't have anything. We didn't like anything to do with.
There's no way that anyone on any sketch show can say, yeah, I've never heard of Monty Python.
We didn't borrow anything from it. I actually don't like Monty Python.
Yeah, you would never get anyone saying that. do you have any, you said you've never seen Life of Brian, right? No. Okay. So Life of Brian is probably where they took a much darker tone because, like you were saying, I guess a lot of their fan base would be more interested in the lighthearted absurdity. But the story of Life of Brian is a guy who is mistaken as Jesus. It's Brian.
Wow.
It's a movie that's much darker, and a lot of, I want to say a fair amount of countries banned and just would not bring into the country, or distribute within the country. It's not one of, I'm not as familiar with it as I am with Holy Grail, just because the last time I watched it was probably 5 years ago. 5-6 years ago. I think maybe I was showing it to my wife and she was just kind of like, eh. It's funny. So they do have some darker stuff, but it's not as popular. Some of their audio releases in the mid-80s that were cobbled together audio from skits, and I think Eric Idle and Graham Chapman worked up new routines for them. They kind of skewed more darkly.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a joke about a guy just being eviscerated for no reason. Kind of Kafka-esque.
Mm-hmm.
it's funny when you hear it. My description of it does not do it justice, but it's definitely fucking dark.
Yeah. Kafka would be great.
Yeah. A mix of Kafka and Monty Python.
Yeah, you'd get Kids in the Hall. No, just kidding. Yeah. No. That would be one step further. We'd have to go farther than that. And then we'd get Kafka as Kimmy. You'd need much more despair and longing and confusion and being lost. It would be like a mix of, you'd have to mix Monty Python and like Blade Runner 2049. And then you get Kafka. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. There we go. Oh, yeah. So I haven't seen Life of Brian. I've just seen a couple, you know, skits.
Oh, I have to have a movie night then.
Oh, man. So many in the dock.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I think we've so far we planned out like 12 different movie nights.
Well, we better fucking have them before you move.
Yeah, we can have them after we move too.
Okay.
So
we'll just set up like teenage girls and be on the phone and be like, "Oh, did you see that? Oh, wait."
Exactly.
Watching them at the same time, just bah, bah, bah.
Yeah, I'm still like a teenage girl in that respect. So, yeah, where I'm moving has plenty of rooms. So once we're kind of settled, we'll see about visits. Maybe we'll just meet up, and you guys aren't that far, honestly.
Yeah.
As long as we split up drives.
We could probably always meet in Chattanooga, too.
Yeah. For like a big hotel room for movie time. It's like, guys, you're
we'll
doing
have to
it
see
wrong,
if there's
guys.
A convention in Chattanooga or something. And,
yeah, that'd be cool.
I'm sure there's a gaming convention or something. But yeah, that's neither there yet.
Whoa, we veered off.
Yeah, we veered off. Surprise! Yeah,
good stuff.
So, yeah, I highly recommend Monty Python to anyone who's interested in kind of the roots of comedy and a good example of... I feel like I say the words too much of surrealist and absurdist, but like there's really no other way to describe what they're doing because it's not Dadaist. It's it's surreal and absurd. It's not illogical. It just... might not.
It goes out there. They go past the punchline and they continue to develop it.
Yeah.
It's great. I enjoyed it. I will definitely watch more of it. And I'm happy too that from what I've been able to see that it's not something that would really benefit much really from like a Blu-ray presentation. Like the DVDs would be just fine. I mean, because that's old film. That's old English stock of film. Maybe for the films themselves. Yes, the Holy Grail, you know, would probably be fun for us. And I'm only saying that because when I go out to get something, I'm like, oh, I want as best a representation as possible. But I feel this is so...
Yeah, the DVD remastering is actually really, really good on the A&E release. Mm-hmm. You can probably pick up a copy of it on DVD for super cheap now. The movies, it doesn't really matter so much because... Meaning of Life came out, what, in 83? There's only so much remastering they can do. Yeah.
And it's not like you're watching it for, like, the beautiful costume work.
No.
You know, you want to see their faces and their expressions, and that's...
Which they're very practiced at giving you the wide eyes and the... you know, they've worked a stage before. They know how to communicate that effectively, so...
Great. Yeah. I think that will probably be button us up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So. Yeah, because I can feel we're kind of petering out with just going, Monty Python's great. They just keep on
so
moving.
So what's next week?
Oh, next week, let me get my handy-dandy notebook. Mm-hmm. Next week is Gloom, the card game.
Have we played that? Have we played that?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, so.
So Zach is just going to be coming here by himself. Recording the podcast, apparently.
No, we'll play a few hands of it before we record.
That'll work.
Sure you can find people playing it online too. Uh-huh.
That'll be the podcast, me watching other people play Gloom.
Well, no, we can get into it next week. But yeah, no, it's a fun game where you're trying to make your family as miserable as possible.
Oh wow! So it's like the game of life, but intentionally.
Yes.
Trying to
yes,
do it. Okay.
Exactly. But yeah, it's a card game, not a board game.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like you broke your fridge. Oh, look, your wife's pregnant again.
Well, no. So like you'll have members of a family in your hand.
Oh, I was talking about life.
And
like, bad version of life.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Explain the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you'll have cards that represent members of your family in your hand. Mm-hmm. Every player plays a different family. And they're see-through cards. And so you stack modifiers on them that go... dropped ice cream in the park, -10 or -2 or whatever. And you're trying to get that number as high as you can and then play a card that will kill that character, which will lock the points.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a race to the bottom of how miserable can you make your family. And it's illustrated in this like Edward Gorey style, Adam's Family looking type art. So it fits the theme.
That's great.
Well, but yeah, we'll talk about that next week.
I squished in something else. Maybe that sounds like a good bookend once I finish watching Stranger Things.
Okay.
I might put timestamps on that just so if, because I know not everyone can pound those all out within like a week or two. So by then, by the time that comes out, Stranger Things have been out a couple weeks. But yeah. I might put a little timestamp or at least say, hey, spoilers starting for the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's spoilers as always. find us on Facebook, Back Row Super Show, 4 words, not 2 or 3, like some people have been saying. I don't see it yet. It's like, no, it's 4 words. It's separate words.
We could have just mashed them up into 2 words. We might think about that now. I haven't been privy to this difficulty.
But yeah, apparently a search for backspace row space super show does not show you anything on iTunes.
Oh, wow. Come on,
which
Apple.
I would have just thought the word search would be smarter than that, but apparently not.
It wouldn't be like Google level.
Yeah. So yeah, find us on iTunes. Give us good ratings. Find us on Facebook. Patreon goals still to be determined. I don't know what we can do.
I got goals set up. I know you're not going to go along with it. I got okay, it. Well, we I can got talk my about them later. Out. Yeah.
till then,
my half done.
We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys. All right. See you in the back row.
Bye.